May it please the court, counsel. My name is Keith Goldman, registration number 37769, appearing for the appellant, the Lake County Board of County Commissioners. The question presented by our appeal is this: can county commissioners communicate with one another and with their attorney and perhaps involve employees on a moment's notice if the situation requires it, in a way that does not run afoul of the open meetings law? Or, as the Herald contended in the trial court and as they contend on this appeal, must they wait in any and every circumstance for the 24-hour full and timely notice before they can gather and discuss matters, personnel issues, such as the personnel issue that the board was dealing with on February 19th. The board's position, of course, is that the open meetings law does not prohibit convening in the way the board did on February 19th and February 20th because of the unique circumstance they faced.
So you're relying on the emergency exception?
Primarily, Your Honor. We do want to address the contention that based on what they were meeting to discuss and what they were hoping to accomplish, the open meetings law can and has been interpreted in such a fashion so as to take this out of the open meetings law entirely to support a finding that this wasn't a meeting subject to the advanced public notice requirement at all.
Well,
first and foremost,
well, since, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to turn around.
That was my fault, go ahead.
Since you're relying on the emergency exception, why couldn't you have gotten this done with 24-hour notice? My understanding that the victim was on vacation or something during that time period.
The complaining witness and the testimony was a little bit unclear, was either on some form of leave or was not reporting to the office because of her concerns about her supervisor's behavior. But to address the court's question as to why they could not have waited for 24 hours, I think the answer to that lies in what exactly the board was hoping to accomplish on February 19th. And to get that question, I think we have to understand what the board knew as individuals and as a collective, and what they wanted to do on the 19th. And let me be specific. Commissioner Bordonia had talked to the department director, Mr. Taylor, and had heard the partial confession that in a sense corroborated some of Ms. Masterson's allegations. He was the only one. The other two commissioners had not spoken to Mr. Taylor on the 19th. In addition, Commissioner Bordonia had talked to outside employment counsel about this issue to get their advice and counsel. The other two commissioners had not. No one at this point in time had consulted with the county attorney. So when they sought to convene at 3:30 in the afternoon on February 19th, the goal was to share that information and discuss what options they believed they had. So the question is, was the board permitted to do that and only that on February 19th? And were they correct in dealing with this situation and communicating that information immediately and not waiting a day? Under those circumstances, the need to gather and talk was an emergency. Whether some later action would be taken with respect to Mr. Taylor's employment or some protective action needed to be taken with respect to Ms. Masterson, perhaps those questions, as the situation unfolded, could have waited 24 hours. But the need to meet and convene is what gave rise to the emergency.
Well, you say it's an emergency that you're relying on that, but why couldn't the board have notified the public? We're meeting tomorrow, 24 hours from now, on a personnel matter. Wait 24 hours, and then convene and say, okay, now we're going into executive session on this personnel.
On February 19th, the board didn't know the situation it was confronting. They were right on the advice of employment counsel and on the advice of the county attorney to meet and discuss preliminarily to see if any formal action needed to be taken. The reason why they couldn't wait is they didn't know how widespread the problem was, and they didn't know the extent of the issue with Mr. Taylor. Remember, the allegation that came forward from Ms. Masterson was that Mr. Taylor was ingesting prescription pain medication, was distributing, selling prescription pain medication, was doing that in county offices, and was doing that with the help of another employee. When Mr. Taylor told Commissioner Bordonia that he had exchanged on occasion prescription pain medication, and Commissioner Bordonia further received the advice that that in and of itself, according to the employment attorneys, was a dismissible offense, the need to meet and discuss their options and decide, is this something that we want to take formal action on, is a meeting that can happen immediately. The meeting to convene and vote as to whether Mr. Taylor would be terminated is a meeting that could have been and should have been, if it took place, noticed pursuant to the strict terms of the open meetings law. It would have required 24 hours advance notice. It would have required a public vote to convene and discuss with Mr. Taylor the allegations. And then if they decided as a group that they were going to move forward with his termination, they would have had to come out of the executive session and have that vote. That's what the open meetings law would have required if those steps were taken or if those steps were necessary. So when I say it's important to keep in mind what they knew and what they wanted to talk about, what they knew and what they wanted to talk about on February 19th is the relevant question. And that's what makes the meeting justified under the emergency circumstance exception that's been carved out by case law. Let me continue to address the emergency circumstance exception here, because I think one of the things that this court needs to address, because there's a dispute about it in the briefs, is what standard of review should be applied to the determination by the trial court that this wasn't an emergency that would justify excusing advance public notice. It is the board's position that the standard of review is de novo. Every appellate case in Colorado that is interpreting the terms of the open meetings law and applying it to a set of factual circumstance has found that that is a de novo question that's reviewed as a matter of law. The cases that are cited by the Herald to support their contention that it's a fact finding that's accorded deference under a clearly erroneous standard, those cases all discuss legal contexts outside the open meetings law, negligence cases, dependency and neglect proceedings, family law cases. They cite Hesse versus McClintock. They cite In Re Marriage of Ron and KB versus Peeble. From the board versus Castilla County to Darien versus the town of Marble, to every case that both sides cite dealing with how does the Open Meetings Law Act apply in a circumstance for a particular set of facts, de novo review is applied every time. And so that is, to this emergency question, the standard of review we are urging this court to apply. So then, to address the question head on of, is this an emergency and does it justify the meeting that took place February 19th? I agree with the Herald. There are no cases in Colorado that confront head on the question of what kind of emergency justifies a meeting without advance public notice. Lewis versus Town of Nederland is the case that comes closest. In that case, the question the Court of Appeals is confronting is, given that the Town of Nederland has a city ordinance that specifically spells out how emergency meetings are supposed to be conducted, does that town ordinance conflict with the state's public meetings law? And so the Court of Appeals in the Lewis versus the Town of Nederland determines that no, there is room in the open meetings law for emergency meetings, and it talks generally, well, it's not the holding of the case, it talks generally about what set of circumstances might give rise to the need to meet immediately. And the quotation from Lewis versus Town of Nederland is, the notice provision in the open meetings law has been construed as setting forth a flexible standard which varies depending on the type of meeting involved. An emergency necessarily presents a situation which public notice and likewise a public forum would be either impractical or impossible. And then they talk about a dictionary definition of emergency might be appropriate to apply. That's the extent of the guidance that we have from Colorado decisional law. In light of that, I think it's useful and instructive to look at sister states that have similar open meetings laws, but have confronted the question head on of what kind of emergency counts, what qualifies and what doesn't. For that reason, I cited the Meyer versus Board of Regents case, a case out of the Nebraska Court of Appeals in 1993, where the Board of Regents are confronting this situation. They're not pleased with the job the university president is doing, and they're trying to negotiate the resignation of the university president. Because of the president's travel schedule, they're having a very difficult time pinning him down. When they find that he's going to be in between trips, they meet immediately, they kind of seize on the president, and they have a meeting to discuss the terms of the resignation and the job he's doing, the president's performance. And they decide, they negotiate, and they agree on the terms of the resignation of the university president. The question the Court of Appeals confronted in Nebraska, applying a very similar, if not identical, definition of emergency is, are those circumstances sufficient? And the Nebraska Court of Appeals said, we need to adopt a flexible definition of emergency so that local public bodies or state public bodies in that sense aren't restricted from performing their duties in a reasonable manner. That idea comes and is shared in Colorado's case. Benson versus McCormick, a Colorado Supreme Court case, states the purpose of Colorado's open meetings law is not to unreasonably interfere with the ability of public officials to perform their duty in a reasonable manner. Similarly, in a case out of Ohio, we have the concern about a school board president who is, they're debating whether, the school board, excuse me, is debating whether a school employee needs to step down. And the question in Wolf versus Liverpool School District is debating and trying to negotiate the terms of an employee's contract under certain time constraints, is that an emergency or is it not? And the view expressed is we need to adopt a flexible understanding of emergency. It's not the tort understanding of emergency. It's not the responding to first responder type emergencies. It's a flexible interpretation of emergency that does not prevent local public bodies from doing the work they need to do.
May I interrupt you for a moment? Because you talked a little bit about the emergency and then the case where they were dealing with dismissing an employee. Can I get to the issue here with respect to personnel matters and just ask you how you respond to the district court's concern that you cannot reconcile 246.402.2F and 246.402.4F1, having to do with personnel matters and then having to do with day-to-day supervision. Can you speak to what the district court's concern was?
Yes. So the district court, in addressing our argument that this doesn't even qualify as a meeting under the open meetings law, the district court said, well, personnel matters are already written into the open meetings law, so how is it that this doesn't qualify as a meeting when personnel matters are presumptively something that can be discussed in an executive session? And the distinction is a distinction that was drawn in Castilla County. Namely, if the meeting concerns the policy-making responsibilities of the local public body, under those circumstances, that is the type of meeting that's subject to the open meetings law. And if it is personnel matters that they're discussing, and in this circumstance, if it's formal action, whether to fire an employee, whether to suspend an employee, that they are convening to deliberate about, that is something that can take place under the auspices of an executive session under 2F. Here, if the county commissioners are just meeting to further investigate the matter, talk about what various attorneys have told them, and discuss what their options might be moving forward, That is not a meeting under the open meetings law, and it does not yet come under the terms of the executive session personnel matters exception. I see only have 30 seconds left. I'd like to reserve at least that for rebuttal.
All right.
May it please the court. I'm Ashley Kissinger, attorney registration number 37739, and I represent the Herald Democrat newspaper in Leadville and its editor, Marcia Martinick. Your Honor, the board concedes that it met in this meeting to discuss the confession by a county department head that he had engaged in criminal conduct, to discuss the outside counsel's advice that what the board needed to do was terminate Mr. Taylor or give him an ultimatum that if he didn't resign, he would be terminated, and to discuss what they should do. There's no rational reading of the open meetings law that would say that this is not a meeting subject to the open meetings law's terms. Now, nobody disputes that the board was entitled to discuss this matter privately, but the way that the board went about doing that in this case violated the open meetings law because they did not convene an executive session meeting at a public meeting that had been properly noticed. And the Gamina versus Sterling decision of this court is unequivocal about the consequences of that. The consequence of that is that the meeting is rendered not an executive session at all, but rather a closed meeting that was illegal under the open meetings law because it was not properly noticed, and therefore the audio tapes of that meeting must be released. The trial court should therefore be affirmed. Your Honors, I'd like to, I guess I'll first address the emergency argument, since that's the argument that Mr. Gilman is focusing on today. And in this case, the trial court was correct that there was no unforeseen emergency here, and that even assuming that there had been, the board's actions thereafter did not comply with the open meetings law. They didn't try to even remotely comply with the kind of notice that the open meetings law contemplates. To the first point, this was not an unforeseen emergency, which is in stark contrast to the town of Netherland case. First of all, speaking to Judge Ramon's point about the facts, the employee had told the board a week prior to this meeting that Mr. Taylor had been engaged in this criminal conduct. And around that same time, she was kept coming to them saying she was fearing for her safety. So they let her go out on leave and stay away from the building. And the following week, she was already scheduled to be out on vacation. So she was going to be gone all the way until February 25th. So there was no emergency with respect to keeping her safe on February 19th. Same thing with respect to Taylor. There was no emergency with respect to him at the time of this February 19th meeting, because at the time of that meeting, they had already suspended him from his job. They had already told him he was not allowed to drive county vehicles. And they had already told the undersheriff that he was not allowed to come to the building. So there was no, as a factual matter, under any review of this evidence, whether clearly erroneous or de novo, there was no unforeseen true emergency here. And to that point, the board's own actions demonstrate that even they didn't think this was an emergency. They met that day at 3:30, but rather than continuing the so-called emergency until they had figured out what to do, they suspended the meeting, attended to personal obligations that evening, and then convened the regular meeting that was already scheduled and properly noticed for that evening. Now, they could have canceled that meeting. If there was really an emergency, they would have canceled their ordinary, regular public meeting and said, sorry, we have an emergency we're dealing with. We'll have to reschedule that meeting. And they didn't do that. They postponed discussion until the next morning.
So, Ms. Kissinger, let me ask you this. I'll ask you the same question that I asked your counterpart.
Yes.
If the board had put out a notice saying tomorrow, 24 hours from today, we're going to meet to discuss a personnel matter. They wait 24 hours. People, presumably the Herald shows up. They say, okay, we have a personnel matter. Now we're going into executive session. Would you have any problems with how that was handled at that point?
I would have one small problem with that. It's actually kind of a consequential problem. I don't have a problem with them meeting, going into executive session to discuss the personnel matter. We can see that they were able to discuss all the stuff that they discussed in an executive session. However, in the actual convening of the executive session, the open meetings law sets out certain requirements about what you must do to convene. One of those requirements says you must identify the matter to be discussed in as much detail as you can without compromising the reason for holding an executive session. Just simply saying we're going into executive session to discuss personnel matters, which is what the board did here, is not enough. That doesn't identify the topic specifically enough. And the Gumina versus Sterling case makes that clear. That's exactly what happened there. They simply said we're going into executive session to discuss personnel matters without this, you know, giving the public any clue as to what kind of personnel matters they were discussing.
May I follow up on that?
Yes.
You're talking about personnel matters. There's also, separate from personnel matters and the need to notice with respect to that, a provision which allows county commissioners to address day-to-day supervision. Can you explain why this does not fall within day-to-day supervision, since it is basically addressing what may be misconduct of an employee?
Yes, Your Honor. If this particular conduct, the dismissal of a department head, was considered to be day-to-day ordinary supervision of employees, there would really be no reason for the personnel matters exception or the personnel matters exemption for executive sessions in the first place. In other words, that would just swallow up. F would swallow up the personnel matters.
Doesn't personnel matters, isn't that a very broad category, such as you could be discussing generally what kind of leave without pay employees are going to get, generally what kind of compensation is going to apply to a particular class of employee? So personnel matters seems to be a very, very broad category, whereas day-to-day supervision seems to be a subcategory of personnel matters, which relate to what a supervisor is expected to do with respect to an individual employee on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, you're
right. A fair way to distinguish those two?
It's not, because of another provision in the statute.
Okay.
And I direct your attention to 402.4. Where is it? I'm sorry. 4F2. So the personnel matters exemption is divided into two parts. The first part says you can go into executive session to discuss personnel matters, except if the employee who's the subject of that meeting has requested an open meeting. Part two says some very important language that speaks exactly to what you're struggling with, which it says the provisions of paragraph one do not apply to discussions of personnel policies that do not require the discussion of matters personal to particular employees. So in other words, if a board is going to talk about general personnel policies like you were describing, they have to do that in an open meeting. They can't do it in executive session. All they can do in the executive session is discuss matters with respect to a particular employee. And so, therefore, you have to make a distinction between, well, which matters with respect to a particular employee rise to the level of needing to be discussed in, you know, noticed under this personnel matters provision to be discussed privately on one hand, or fall within the day-to-day supervision of employees that F says boards of county commissioners can do without even having to provide notice to the meeting.
But doesn't 4F1 and 2 that four in and of itself has to do with members of a local public body, which is also applicable to a much broader category of boards or individuals.
Right.
Whereas the day-to-day supervision specifically references county commissioners.
It does, Your Honor, but the personnel matters exemption, because it does apply to all kinds of local public bodies, including boards. They didn't carve out boards in that provision.
No, they carved out boards in the prior section and exempted what they seemed to say was day-to-day supervision from the notice requirements under four.
But if they were trying to carve out what you're saying, they could have just simply said 4.1 doesn't apply to boards of county commissioners. Board of county commissioners can discuss individual employees without having to comply with the open meetings law notice provision. But they didn't use that language. They used very specific language. They said day-to-day, get the language so I say it right. Can't seem to put my hands up, but it says the day-to-day supervision of employees, which is very different language than just discussing the employee. So if they wanted to carve out an exception for this particular kind of public body, they could have just done that in F itself by saying this doesn't apply to boards of county commissioners. It wouldn't have even needed all that extra language about day-to-day supervisory responsibility. And that kind of language, I mean, when you just think about it just in a commonsensical kind of way, that kind of language doesn't suggest, it doesn't sound like the kind of activity that's occurring here where they're discussing actually firing a county department head. That's something greater.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. This employee, this department head, did he have a direct, was he a direct report to a manager or do you report directly to the board itself?
My understanding is he directly reported to the board.
Does that make a difference when we don't have a higher level management or an HR department and the board is effectively doing both?
That is one of the arguments that the board did make below about the day-to-day supervisory provision. But again, I think that the language in the statute itself speaks to that issue. They did not exempt out boards of county commissioners from the provision in F and say, hey, if the board of county commissioners talking about an employee, you don't have to do any of this stuff. They didn't do that. They specifically said, if it's a board of county commissioners and they're discussing day-to-day sort of stuff about an employee. And how is this day-to-day? I mean, it's not day-to-day that somebody's getting fired, the county department head. So I think it doesn't make sense as a matter of common sense or as a matter of statutory interpretation to read it that way.
So how do you define day-to-day supervision?
Well, I would say, I mean, there aren't any cases, so it's difficult. You know, there are no cases on that provision. But it seems to me that day-to-day ordinary supervision is things like normal human resource functions, where you know something short of a final terminative action with respect to an employee, or not necessarily even terminating, but maybe transferring. Kind of if you adopted employment law concepts to it, there's some kind of formal ultimate action with respect to an employee. Maybe that rises to personnel, to the level of discussing an employee in the personnel matters exemption, versus the day-to-day supervision is, hey, can you go do this project today, or let me take a look at that project you did and provide you advice. They don't have to, you know, notice a meeting to do that sort of stuff.
But if you were going to define day-to-day supervision based upon what the likely outcome was of addressing a particular employee's conduct, wouldn't you then have to presuppose that the board knew prior to addressing the issue what the outcome was going to be?
I'm not sure.
Let me try and help you with that. So if you're saying the day-to-day supervision only covers, for instance, more minor infractions and going up to a certain point but not going to firing, mm-hmm. wouldn't the board have to know before they address an issue then whether they're going to fire or take some other action in order to know whether it falls under day-to-day supervision or something else, and how would they know that ahead of time if they haven't had a chance to discuss it?
Well, I think that if they knew ahead of time that they were going to be fired, then clearly it wouldn't apply. They couldn't take advantage of that.
Right. Let's assume that they don't know what they're going to do. They just know there's an issue they need to address.
They get in a meeting with the employee, and the employee's, you know, saying things that make it clear now to the person sitting there, to the quorum, or the entire board sitting there, that, hey, we need to terminate this employee. I think at that point, unless there was a true emergency, perhaps, they would then need to notice a meeting and go into that meeting under the personnel provision in order to terminate them.
Isn't that what happened here, or at least what the court found was going to happen here, was that they were discussing what their response should be, and then they were going to, the court found they would notice, go into the public meeting, and then actually take any formal action with respect to whatever the discussion was that they had?
Well, they were definitely meeting here to discuss formal action, and their argument pointed to Castilla County is that, hey, if you're discussing formal action, it comes within the open meetings law. So if they are in the meeting and they are discussing whether or not to take formal action with respect to him, we know it's under the open meetings law. Now you're asking me, how does that relate to subsection F? I still think the answer to this issue comes down to your interpretation of the words day to day.
Right.
Why would they use those words? If those words would be superfluous if a firing could be a day-to-day activity, and it's not something that happens regularly for boards of county commissioners. They're not firing people on a day-to-day basis. So I
think supervisors may be in enacting discipline, or at least be placed on notice that they need to respond to an employee's conduct as a day-to-day supervisor, right? There seems to be a difference between responding to something, and then there's this other category of responding which constitutes policy or formal action. There seems to be a differentiation between those. Supervision and then taking formal action. Is there not?
A distinction between supervision and taking formal action. I think that, I mean, the only thing I can respond to here is that there wouldn't be a need for the personnel provision that allows the Board of County Commissioners to go into executive session to discuss an employee. There has to be a difference, the way the statute is constructed, between personnel matters involving boards of county commissions and day-to-day supervision matters involving boards of county commissions.
Does it turn at all on the level of the individual concerned? Does it make any difference if this is the director as opposed to being some ordinary low-level employee?
I don't think so. I think that the act of, it's the act that makes a difference, but I guess it could be the act and how consequential the act is that would rise to the level of being more than just a day-to-day thing. It could be both.
Okay.
In this case, it wouldn't matter, right? We have a county department.
I'm just trying to see what you think the test is.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
I kind of took you off course.
That's okay, that's all right. I'm far beyond my time. May I have just a moment to wrap up?
Yes.
Okay.
I think, Is this not right?
Yeah, they stopped. It's gone past.
Ah, okay. Sorry. I took you off course, and then I...
That's all right. No, it's important. Sorry. It's important for me to answer what's concerning you. So.
Thank you.
All right, so I'll try to wrap up quickly. So the other important thing to note about the emergency exception is that even if you assume that there was an emergency here, that doesn't excuse them from, that just excuses them from acting speedily. It doesn't excuse them from acting secretly. They could have noticed the meeting right then. Hey, this meeting's going to happen in a few hours. At least that would have been some public notice, and they didn't do that. So the court properly found there wasn't an emergency.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Your Honors.
I just wanted to clarify how much time I have.
I think you have about 28 seconds or so.
That's what my number was that exactly.
Yes, and I was monitoring the extra time that the other council does, so you have about 4 extra minutes now.
I'll certainly leave it to the court. The one point I wanted to address was this. All but a handful of smaller counties in Colorado employ county administrators or county managers. Lake County is one of the handful because of budgetary or other reasons that does not. Because of that, they are tasked with doing a large number of things that otherwise would be done by a county administrator, including investigating, discussing, and talking to attorneys about complaints of employee misconduct. That's not to say they're excused entirely from the constraints of the open meetings law, but it is to say that that's the reason why you see appellate courts interpreting the open meetings law in a flexible way that allows county commissioners to do their job. Lewis versus Town of Netherland is a good example. If you look at that case, the emergency that was discussed was a town trustee was headed on a vacation. And they were concerned that they weren't going to be able to convene a quorum while he was gone. That was sufficient to justify the unnoticed meeting that the town trustees engaged in Lewis versus the Town of Netherland. You see the cases from other states talking about what an emergency is and what an emergency isn't. The examples are running out of time to renew an employee's contract. Running out of time to get rid of a university president, trying to find time in their schedule to meet with the university president. There is a flexible interpretation. There's room in the open meetings law for a flexible interpretation of these exceptions so they can do their job.
Mr. Gomez, let me redirect you a little bit, however.
Sure.
Assume for the purposes of this question only that we disagree with you that this is a true emergency. Walk us through how you still prevail under the OML.
Sure. Under the OML, as interpreted in cases like Castilla County, not every time commissioners get together to talk does it amount to a meeting. So there are a couple of options here. First of all, and the one that's argued principally in our brief is, if county commissioners are meeting, but it's outside the auspices of their policymaking responsibilities, if they're meeting to find facts and investigate further and decide what options do we have, Madam County Attorney, what do you think we should do outside employment counsel? That's not a meeting under the open meetings law because it's not part of the policymaking responsibilities. Again, if the next step were reached, if they're going to convene to decide whether they should take formal action, that is a meeting and that's a different question, but that's not what happened. So this court, I'm asking this court to find if they move past the emergency circumstance exception and fine and address the question of whether this is a meeting. We don't even get to the question of whether this is day-to-day supervision because unless it meets the statutory definition as interpreted by cases like Castilla County of a meeting, we don't even need to evaluate how the statutory terms apply. I would note, though, that if that is the direction the court goes, we'll still have to address, well, what do we do about the fact that they made a recording of this meeting? There was a request under CORA for the minutes of that meeting. If the court rejects the emergency circumstance rationale, but finds that this was not a meeting under the open meetings law, the correct course of action, I believe, would be to remand the case for further findings pursuant to the CORA request, because it's still a public record. And so if that's the direction this court goes, I think it will require additional findings because the district court has not yet addressed things like, well, what to make of the attorney-client privilege defense that would shield us from disclosure under CORA. What to make of the privacy concerns that were expressed by Mr. Taylor and other employees that would take this outside of CORA's requirements. So I want to be clear, I guess I'm a relief that, we're seeking if that's the direction the court goes. I just leave with this, we're asking the Court of Appeals not to, we're asking this court, and not to find contrary to Lewis, but follow the flexible interpretation stated there. And I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your arguments. The matter stands submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. We stand in recess.